everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my guest today is Shannon Stein. Shannon is the superintendent of Lake Norman Charter Schools in Huntersville, North Carolina, which she has let me know is a suburb of Charlotte, and it is also the largest charter school in North Carolina. Shannon, it is so great to have you on the show today.
It's a pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
So tell everybody a little bit about your school and some information about what you do and beyond what I've said.
Yeah. So happy to. So Lake Norman Charter is, as you said, the largest charter school in the state of North Carolina. We service currently 2,210 students, and we are opening a new school a year from August. So that's currently being built. So we'll have two elementaries, one middle school, and one high school. And our school was based on the vision of students having leadership and service, those soft, durable skills that will take them into this crazy world of AI and ever-changing, world that they're going to go into with those skills that will make them good servant leaders into their community. Starting in kindergarten all the way through high school, part of our curriculum helps to enhance those skills interwoven with strong academic skills. So we've been a charter school for 28 years, and we in North Carolina, they started charter schools 29 years ago. So we were in the second batch of charter schools. And so we are one of the older ones that have been around. And I'm happy to report, in addition to living our mission, we also have been academically very strong. So we have a very diverse population because we are a suburb of Charlotte, which is exciting. And this is my 15th year of being at Lake Norman Charter. And what's been cool is to see the evolution and the growth and the changes that has really, quite honestly, made us a stronger school. So it's an honor to be able to lead in a place where you're really impacting a lot of families and a lot of kids, but also seeing what they're bringing into the community.
Wow, that's impressive. You said 2010. Did you start as a superintendent, or was that something that you worked up to?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So while I had my superintendent's license, I actually came as the first high school principal of Lake Norman Charter. So it was really an interesting story. They started as a middle school here at Lake Norman Charter, and they stayed as a middle school for 10 years, perfected it, did it well, made sure that, the vision for the school was well established. And interesting thing about charter schools, I always want to remind people, because depending on where people are listening, charter schools are public schools. We're not private. We have public funds. We have the same accountability. We just have some flexibility in some areas, depending on what state you're in, that others might. And we always live a mission. So some charter schools, there's a charter school just down the road from us that is it's a CTE charter school. It does welding and cooking. And so that's their mission. There's ones that are in all throughout the Charlotte area that have different missions than us. So that's what makes a charter school.
I saw one that was fine arts. That was really interesting. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's great. Yep. And really, as a school of choice, what I love about that, because prior to coming to Lake Norman Charter, I'd always been in traditional public schools, and they're great. But you have to be a lot to everybody, right? You have to meet the needs of every student. And while we do that, it's always with our mission in mind, that we're making sure that leadership and service and college preparatory journey is part of what we're considering. And so that allows us to go a little deeper in those areas. So anyway, like to remind folks of that. So then in 2010, I came to Lake Norman Charter as the first high school principal, had my license to be a superintendent, had not intended to pursue it, but then there was just a turnover after my first year, sat in that role for an interim and enjoyed it and was asked to stay on in that role. So
fantastic.
That's how I got to be here.
You've got quite the tenure. I know superintendents, sometimes it's not long, I've been to several conferences. I'm not a superintendent. I'm a speech therapist, but I've talked to a lot of them in my career, and 7-8 years is your tenure. And so when you have superintendents that stay, that's fantastic. So good for you.
Yeah. Even 7-8 years is good. I think the national average for superintendents is somewhere to 3 to 5. And I think Yeah, it's and so, you know, what's been nice about that is the ability to see vision from start to finish, right? And luckily, we're very fortunate as a school that we don't have a lot of teacher turnover. And in this day and age where there's teacher shortages throughout the United States, we're very thankful to have such, you know, dedicated professionals that have stayed with us a lot. And we also have really strong boards that have helped to set that vision and empower our teachers and our administration to carry out living the mission. So I think that's part of the secret to success. And one of the things I think I like best here is that in other school districts I had been in, when you talk about strategic plans, it was something that happened every 3 to 5 years. You put it in a nice binder,
Yeah, and
you put
set
it
it
on
on
the
the shelf.
shelf, right? Pull it out, you kind of blow it off. You're like, oh, how'd we do? Oh, well, we didn't even really address this. And that's not our model. Our model is a very ongoing, constantly looking at what our stakeholders are saying, what our student performance is, marrying those together, and then looking at trends that we see in the world and how can we marry those all together, and every year re-looking at what we're spending our strategic time on. It's just a different way to approach things, and I think
It's a
it's
successful
helped a
way. It's a
it's
successful
been
way.
successful for us.
I've always said when I've talked to people about companies and stuff, it's like your mission statement isn't really a mission statement unless you live, eat, and breathe it, because it has to be a, and everybody in your organization that has something to do with it should be able to like just roll it off
Articulate.
of their lips. Because that's when your people take it up, and it sounds like they have, you know, when everybody embraces your mission and what you're doing, which is what we do here as well at Lighthouse, is it just becomes a part. And I always tell people too, and you know this, I'm sure as well. It isn't a goal unless you write it down and you look at it and you work on it and you do things. And that's how you grow too, because you're setting goals that you're and reaching them because they're alive and working. And kudos to you, because that is absolutely it shows, obviously. So congratulations. That's
Well, thank you.
fantastic.
It's an interesting thing, and especially it's as you live it and breathe it, you also look at it and say, well, what happens when new staff members join us, right? And new people. Because to your point, how do we make sure that as we're going towards goals, that we're going back to those key stakeholders and having them feel like they're having, one, they know where things are at, and two, they're having voice in that. So even with our strategic committees, so what we do is we set committees that usually have a 3 to 5 year goal, and then we then set annual goals, and then we report
Based
back
on
to our parents. And then that way they know. And quite honestly, it's sometimes it can be uncomfortable because you look and you're like, we're not pacing the way we want to pace. Something has come up and we're not quite hitting the mark, you know, with that. Or you can celebrate, and luckily there's more celebrations than not. But I think the hard thing is, one, when you bring new people into the organization, how you get them up to speed so that they do embrace it and are part of your culture. And two, how do you make sure that the people, it's not, again, that thing that they've heard once about, and you know, that's an ongoing commitment. And sometimes, you know, if you don't have those systems in place, it just isn't as strong as it should be.
And sometimes you have to deprogram people, you know. I have seen that multiple times. People don't believe we're a faith-based organization. You know, we do charter schools, public schools, virtual schools. It doesn't matter, but we truly live out our mission, and we're not afraid of our faith, you know. And we will hire people. Obviously, we don't care if you believe or not, but the core team does. And it's a huge part of who we are. And so, you know, I mean, our logo looks like a cross. It's intentional, you know. I don't hide any of it. But bringing people along who get that and understand that, who have come from corporate America and they're attracted to it, right? They're attracted to the mission that you've got going on. But you sometimes just have to go, look, family comes before your job here. We want you to take care of your family. It's important. And they're almost like, really? Really? I can do that? It's okay. Yeah.
Right. It's the walking the walk, right?
Yes.
It's, I'm attracted to what you're saying your mission is, but do you really walk the walk?
Yeah.
And testing each of those things. And sometimes, to be honest, that can be difficult for families that seek us out because the way North Carolina is set. So I've been in two states. One was Wisconsin and one was North Carolina. And Wisconsin has a lot of smaller districts. And so they almost operate in a little ways like charter schools because there's such local control.
Right.
When you get to North Carolina, they work in county systems. Well, when you're in a county system that includes a metropolitan area, they're huge, right?
Right.
It is, I think the school employer here may be one of the top, if not the top employer in the county. So you may come from 150,000 people into a organization where you're 230, right? So it is this idea of like, do you really walk the walk or do you just say that?
Each school person
has that. So it is, and so our families, sometimes when they've come, and I think this has gotten better for us. When I first got here, people were running away from something. They were running away from a school district. They were running away from an experience that wasn't positive and not to our mission. And so then they would sometimes question and say, well, why are, but what about this? And I'm like, but this is our mission.
Right.
This is what we do, right?
You came here because this is what we do, and we're going to continue to do that. So let us help you understand it, right? Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's been part of, and now I feel like that's better as time has gone on, as we continue to be established. I think people know that better. But it was a bit of a shift for people who were coming to us to understand, no, we really mean it. We really mean what we say, and we're really going to take everything that we do through the lens of how are we living that mission and how are we meeting these strategic areas that we've talked about.
So I'm going to turn us just a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. So you started in middle school, went to high school.
Yep.
Now you're got your...
We went down to elementary. Down,
that's backwards. Yeah. Most schools don't do that, which is, usually it's like the grades grow as the kids grow, right?
Yeah.
So how did that come about?
Yeah. And so that isn't actually, so a couple of things. So they went up to the middle school was very successful. And then they were going off back into the traditional public schools because there wasn't an option above that. So the board made a decision that, hey, they're having a good success. We need to continue to offer, and live our mission through that. Let that be established for a bit. I had been in the superintendent's role for a bit. And the question begged itself, well, what if we got kids? Because what happened, we were in a non-traditional middle school. We'd start in fifth grade. And we had 200 children that would come to us in fifth grade. They were coming from wildly different experiences, homeschool, accelerated, EC, poor instruction places that they were, they were great kids, but they just didn't have a strong foundation. So we would spend a lot of time in that first year level setting, getting kids up to, giving them supports. So then it begged the question of what would happen if we could have them from kindergarten, knowing the foundation. And my hypothesis, which has come to fact now, our elementary school has been in operation for 7 years. So we now had those kids go up and into our middle school.
Life. They started kindergarten and they've made it to,
correct. But only half of them, because elementary schools by nature are smaller, right? We didn't build a 200.
Yeah.
So we built
Correct.
So we built our first elementary. So 125 of the 200 come from our elementary and still 75 are coming from somewhere else. And what we found is that 125 knows the mission, the family
ready
adopts
go,
the mission.
Right?
And beyond the mission, they've all had these very strong experiences. No matter even where they are personally, they've all had great exposure, great instruction, great support. And then 75 are all over the place again.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why we're building the second elementary school, which will open. And then all of our kids will have the opportunity to have a K-12 experience. Now, again, as a school of choice, you made a good point. Some of our kids might say, I love music or arts. I'm going to go to this music and arts school, or my local school has that, or I want to go into the trade. So I'm going to go to this trade school. So as a school of choice, if they know what our mission is, and if they get to a certain spot, because the problem is in kindergarten, you don't necessarily know what your kid's going
to do. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
So
I will say
we don't see a lot of that, but we do see some of that and quite honestly encourage it because when they're little, you just don't know. So we'll bring in a few kids here and there, but mostly they'll stick with us. And it's nice because you also have this almost smaller community in a larger metropolitan area where your kids will have been with their classmates and had a very similar experience. So
yeah,
it's been interesting. But one of the cool things, Janet, that I really felt like it was an unexpected thing is I think as we started in kindergarten, you know, when we were at fifth grade, I think when you had kids that had differing abilities and some of, you know, neurodiversity, sometimes we weren't getting as many of those kids because they were established in other programs. Now, as an elementary school, we get everybody at the beginning.
Yeah, you're going to have more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. Honestly, it has helped the culture of our school. It has caused us to look at how do we support
kids. It's so good for the kids. Yeah.
Absolutely. Sure. And so, but it's been one of those things that was like, oh, okay, we're having kids, you know, more kids with ESL needs, more kids with neurodiversity needs. And it's been an opportunity for us to better look at, okay, well, how do we serve everybody? But to your point, culturally, it's been wonderful to have kids from all different backgrounds and families from backgrounds. Yep.
You know, and in the last, I would say, I've been a therapist for 30 years. And in the last 15 years, really, we've really kind of like figured out that it isn't good to take them out. It isn't good to like separate them. It isn't good. It isn't good for them. And it's not good for our, quote, normal kids either. We need that diversity in there so that they can see that not everybody thinks the way that they do. And and we're thinking about it. You know, neurodivergence wasn't even a buzzword term at all, you know, and 10 years ago. Were we even talking about neurodivergence before? Yeah. I don't think, you know, and I have a neurodivergent child myself, and he's an amazing, amazing human being. And, you know, he owns it. He's like, I don't think the way that you do, Mom. And I was like, I know, do it your way. He works for me, you know, and he does an amazing job. He's more like his dad and just, he's an extreme version of his dad. And I love them to death, but it's just like, I know that you're going to do things. So just go and do, and it'll be better than what I would come up with anyway, you know? And I just love the fact that we are embracing that as a culture and as human beings, right?
So,
and it sounds like you guys are doing it too, but it doesn't surprise me that you're doing it well based on what I've heard from you. That's fantastic.
Well, and you know, I think sometimes when we talk about neurodiversity, people confuse neurodiversity with ability. There's a lot of kids with neurodivergence that they just need to have things brought to them in different ways.
Yep.
But to your point, they may bring something to a group project, to their peers, because they look at things differently, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we do have kids of all abilities. We have kids that are what they call in North Carolina on the adaptive scale, that they're based on their capability. They need more support and are probably not going to access the normal curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still all these different things that each kid brings to the organization, to their classmates. And so I think it's been really, really good. I always say we're a microcosm of the world. And if our kids don't have exposure with having folks think at things differently, then they're not going to be prepared to go into a workforce or a college or anywhere where they're not having people that are looking at things a little bit differently. But that's what, you know, you end up with a better, richer experience for everybody involved.
Fantastic. That is fantastic. Kudos to you. You guys are doing a great job. It's very evident, obviously. Yeah. And now, you know, you're the largest charter school in North Carolina. It's a win-win. I'm so excited for you guys. That's fantastic. I'm excited for the kids. I get excited for the kids.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when schools do it really well, and that's why we're, you know, that's why we're doing this podcast. You know, so many things. We had an interview the other day we did, and it will come out before yours. She was a transitional teacher, or she ran the transitional program for the young adults, and it was a program in Mission. They had a little mini business. They had started a business, and I was like, woohoo, good for you, and all the things that went along with that, and just like preparing our kids for their future, and it just gives me chills, because I'm just like, oh, it's so cool to see kids win when we do it right, the kids win, and that's the best, you know. And we figured out our lives, you know. But boy, when you do it and you're making it good for the next generation, yay! That's fantastic.
Well, so. I love how you say that kids win, and that's really the goal, right? Is that we can, you know. And I think sometimes back to charter schools, I think that's the point, and the reason traditionals, everybody to get there. You know, I think it is one of those things where people understand naturally that people are going to choose different jobs. They're going to maybe choose different colleges if they're going to college. And yet when it comes to other schools, that there is reason to have choice so that people can look and say, this is a great fit. And this is the experience I want my kiddo to have. I might have another child in my family that this isn't the right experience.
Right?
So,
oh, yeah.
And that's how
yeah.
kids win is by mm-hmm. having opportunities and experiences.
Choices. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And whether, sure. again, traditional public. Or us.
Yeah.
It's just a
yeah,
give.
We're not bashing. We're not bashing
no,
traditional public at all.
Nope.
I don't want anybody ever to hear that because there's yeah. amazing things going on in traditional
yep.
public schools too.
They sure do.
And yeah, for sure. For sure. So
yep.
I'm glad we went there because it's important
yeah.
to people that people hear that too, because there
yeah,
are
absolutely.
So many. And again, that's the point. You know, it's like we want to talk about the amazing things because there's educators in all different realms that are doing amazing things.
That's
and
right.
We're just highlighting what you're doing today. And I'm excited for you. So, okay. One last question. And I ask
okay.
every guest this question, and I usually don't prep and I didn't prep you. So, but I know you'll answer it well. If you could miraculously solve one challenge in your school, what would you want to solve miraculously?
You know, and you can correct me if you want me to go back the
No,
the
it's
other way.
You can answer it however you want to.
So I think probably, and I bet you most educators are going to say this right now, is that really to be an educator is a calling. And I think that we're in a time and space where education has become too political.
Yes.
I really feel like no matter where you stand, more on the conservative mm-hmm. side, more on the liberal side, everybody wants good, strong schools and good, strong education. You know, my son actually graduated from this school and now I have two grandbabies.
Well,
and
congratulations.
You know, the truth is I think about that for them, right? Like we're always the people we love and care about, we want them to have good experiences. And it starts with having that best person in front of them. It starts with having teachers that care and have that calling. And I think, you know, in COVID, first teachers were heroes, then they were zeros, then it was this politicized thing of, you know, I would love that everybody, because everybody can think of a favorite teacher.
Yeah.
Anytime
oh, yeah.
I ask somebody, again, doesn't matter where they sit, they're like, yeah, I had this one teacher, this one coach who are really just teachers in a different realm. If I could change anything, it would be to make education seen as something that could be a unifying force that we all agree upon and that we could make sure we're making people excited to go into the profession. Because again, you said then kids win. And if without those people, kids aren't going to win and there aren't, you know, AI can do a lot. It can't motivate kids. It can be a tool, but it can't be the thing that sees a kid for who they are and develop them. And so, yeah, that would be if I had a magic wand, that would be my thing, because
yeah.
no matter, you know, where you're at, what state you're at, everybody is struggling to get the best and the brightest in. And I think there's a lot of layers to that. And I wish those layers weren't there.
Yeah, that's a great answer. That's a great answer. Well, Shannon, fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for your time and for what you're doing. Where should people go if they want to learn more about you or about your school?
Thanks. I would love if they check out our website, which is LN. Charter, so LakeNormanCharter.org. And there's lots of information there. It talks about the things that we're working on, those strategic areas and our approach to how we get things done. So love if people wanted to check it out there.
Awesome. Great. Well, thanks once again. And it's lovely conversation.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.